As Christians, we've been told to walk in wisdom toward those who are outside, redeeming the time. Let your speech always be of grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. If you notice, that's from Colossians chapter 4, verses 5 through 6. You know how it is when you have a dish of food and it lacks just enough salt. It's just a little bit bland. And what happens when you put just a dash of salt in? Sometimes it makes all the difference in the world, doesn't it? It's like I heard a preacher say once, he was illustrating this, talking about this particular same point. Just like when you're making oatmeal, just a little dash of salt makes all the difference when it comes to taste. So our speech should be like that when we interact with our neighbors and our friends. We should contribute something flavored with grace to give that conversation a positive tone that everybody takes home and remembers. And that only comes through study and effort on our part. We looked at the Psalms we looked at Proverbs. We've been looking at Proverbs when it comes to relationships with our spouse and our children. And so today we want to look at relationships with our friends and neighbors and in our business relationships. So what are some of the benefits of friendships to begin with? First, they are a source of comfort in difficult times. Proverbs 17:17, the first part of that says, "Friends, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity." So they're there to help us in adversity. In some cases, a friend may be even better for comfort than a brother. Proverbs 18:24. "But there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." We've all had those times, possibly when we've had family disputes, and looked to a friend that was outside of our family for advice. And there are times when our brothers are just simply not around. Families, members move away, and there are times we need to call on a friend for help or assistance. You know, my sister, she lives in Dallas, and she's always having car problems. And there was a time here a while back, she had car trouble, and it was quite a ways from home. And she was calling me for advice, and she didn't know what to do. And if I could have been there, if I hadn't been 400 miles away, I would have gone to help her. So she ended up calling on a friend to come and help them, and this friend turned out to be a really big blessing. And after that event, they found out the good quality of this particular young man that came to assist them. And so he was closer than a brother, wasn't he? And so we all have times like that when we can depend on our friends for assistance, when sometimes we can't depend on our family. A friend is good for counsel if we are willing to heed it. Again, using the illustration of possibly difficulties in our family relationships, a good and wise friend can offer sound advice. And not only can we depend on others for advice, they should be able to depend on us for good advice and counsel also. That is that being seasoned with salt, where we can offer those few words to help others out. Proverbs 11:14, "Where there is no guidance, the people fall, but in abundance of counselors there is victory." Those that can't or those that won't take advice from others are doomed to fail. Now, friendships, of course, don't just happen by chance. It takes work, it takes cultivation on both sides to develop friendships. And we must be careful the type of people we become friends with, don't we? We've talked about that a couple of weeks ago. The wrong kind of friends can be a curse, not a blessing, and will lead us away from God. First of all, we do not want friends that are gossips. Proverbs 20:19 says, "He who goes about as a slanderer reveals secrets. Therefore, do not associate with a gossip." We don't want to be around friends that are short-tempered. Proverbs 22:24-25, "Do not associate with a man given to anger, or go with a hot-tempered man, or you will learn his ways and find the snare for yourself." The qualities of those that we associate with and become friends with rub off on us. Have you ever been in a group of people where maybe one person in the group starts complaining about something, Well, then next thing you know, somebody else jumps in and they want to complain too. And then somebody else jumps in and they want to complain more than everybody else. And then somebody else jumps in and their problems are worse than everybody else's problems. And it just grows and grows and grows like that. So we need to be careful not to hang out with people like that, that are known for complaining or can't control their anger. Because we will end up just joining in their bad attitudes. In a similar way, we don't need to associate with those that are drunkards and gluttons. Proverbs 23, verses 20 through 21. Do not be with heavy drinkers of wine or with gluttonous eaters of meat. For the heavy drinker and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe one with rags. Again, Peter mentioned we're to be sober so that we will be awake and alert because the devil is seeking to devour us. So we don't want to be like these people that are totally wrapped up in their consumption of alcohol or their consumption of foods, which would be gluttony. They're just totally absorbed in their meals and, you know, that sort of thing. Because the qualities of those around us, their character will rub off on us. People that tend to engage in these activities, they like to have everybody join in and engage in the same excess. You'll notice that's how particularly alcoholic beverages are marketed. They make it look like to be left out is to be, you know, left behind and you're uncool or whatever, not to join in. So they make this very appealing this way. We've got to be careful about associating and having friendships with people that are going to rub off on us the wrong way. Another thing the Proverbs writer warns us about is those given to change. Proverbs 24, 21 through 22. My son, fear the Lord and the king. Do not associate with those who are given to change, for their calamity will rise suddenly. And who knows the ruin that comes from both of them? It's my thinking here that he's saying we should avoid those that are given to change just for change's sake. Those that are always looking for the next big thing, those that are always looking for greener pastures, those that are not grounded in consistency. We need those that are consistent and not driven around by all kinds of different theories and philosophies. You know, that's what we're warned about in the New Testament in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 14. It says, as a result, we are no longer to be children tossed here and there by waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men, by craftiness and deceitful scheming. So we need those around us for friends that are grounded and can give us consistent advice when we come to them for help. We don't need somebody that tells us one thing one day, at one time, and the next day they have changed their minds and they're telling us something else that's totally different advice. So we need to be careful about, and then also these are all qualities we're looking for in ourselves also, just so you know you get that clear. These are qualities we need to develop so we can be the kind of friend that people need. Also he says in Proverbs 25, along the same lines, we need to avoid those that are liars, those that are untrustworthy, and those that are inconsiderate. Like a club and a sword and a sharp arrow is a man who bears false witness against his neighbor. Like a bad tooth and an unsteady foot is confidence in a faithless man in a time of trouble. So we can't depend on people that are not truthful. We can't depend on people that are untrustworthy. If we share a problem with them and they spread that around as gossip, or if they give us, you know, they lie about the situation or whatever, we can't be around people that are that way because we don't want those same qualities being developed in our life. And we also need to avoid those given to violence. We are to be known as Christians, the people that turn the other cheek and do not seek revenge, always allowing God to have vengeance and be the judge. You remember what it says back in Proverbs chapter 1, if you want to go there and read that. Proverbs chapter 1, starting with verse 10. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol, even whole as those who go down to the pit. We will find all kinds of precious wealth. We will fill our houses with spoil. Throw in your lot with us. We shall have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your feet from their path. For their feet run to evil, and they hasten to shed blood. Indeed, it is useless to spread the baited net in the sight of any bird. But they lie in wait for their own blood. They ambush their own lies. So are the ways of everyone who gains by violence. It takes away the life of its possessors. It takes away the life of the possessors. So what can we do to maintain the friendships that we do happen to develop? Those that we're working on. Hope that's not too small. We're going to run through this pretty quick, so you can jot these down if you want to go look at them later, and I would encourage you to do so. Don't take my word for it. Read it yourself and verify that what I'm saying is consistent with what the Bible is teaching here. We need to maintain privacy. That's Proverbs 17 and verse 9, also 26:20. But he who repeats a matter separates friends. Where there is no wood, the fire goes out, and where there is no tale bearer, strife ceases. As the saying goes, gossip spreads like wildfire, and we need to maintain the privacy of our friends when they tell us their important matters. You know, everything today is about privacy on the internet, privacy on Facebook, privacy on this, that, and the other. We need to maintain the privacy in our friendships. The things they tell us, we don't need to be spreading around. We need no senseless arguments and contentions, being contentious. 17 verse 4, 14, 26 verse 21, the beginning of strife is like releasing water. Therefore, stop contention before a quarrel starts. As charcoal is to burning coals and wood to a fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. Fighting about silly things just leads to bigger problems. It's like charcoal to burning coals. We don't need to overstay our welcome. Chapter 25, verse 17, seldom set a foot in your neighbor's house, lest he become weary of you and hate you. Even though we may be close to friends, we still need to respect each other's boundaries and not take advantage of our friends' hospitality. Another thing we can do is don't meddle in their business, in other people's business. Chapter 26, verse 17, he who passes by and meddles in a quarrel not his own is like one who takes a dog by the ears. Is there any other way to illustrate that better? I thought that was kind of funny. If you take a dog by the ears, you're going to have problems. You're going to inherit the wind, as it says in Ecclesiastes. That's a pretty good visual illustration there. We need to be careful about playing bad jokes. Look at this one, 26 and verse 18 and 19. Like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, I was only joking. You know, everybody likes a good practical joke once in a while. But we need to be really careful about not embarrassing or ruining a relationship by taking a joke a little bit too far. Or maybe a joke in bad taste. There are times when it's appropriate to have, you know, fun and have practical jokes and things. We need to be careful and not take it too far. No, we need to avoid insincere flattery. 27 verse 14. He who blesses his friend with a loud voice, rising him early in the morning, it will be counted as a curse to him. Sometimes it may be difficult, but speaking the truth in love may go a long ways towards maintaining a relationship instead of being insincere and shallow with our compliments towards our friends. Of course, the most important thing that we have to cultivate good friendships is first, have a good relationship with God. If we are out of sorts, so to speak, in our spiritual life, then that will, of course, carry over into our personal life, our personal interactions. We all have known people, possibly in the past, that are spiritually sick and have a rotten attitude when it comes to the church and God. And it's nearly impossible to have a friendship with those people, isn't it? So we need to be the people that have a good, strong relationship with God first, that we'll be able to cultivate and help these friendships in our neighborhood and in the church. It says in Proverbs 16, verse 7, when a man's ways please the Lord, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. So when we are pleasing to the Lord, it's going to make our relationships, even with our enemies, better. We're going to be at peace with our enemies, aren't we? And the last thing I'm going to mention here to cultivate friendships is we need to be quick to show love. Proverbs 10:12. Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all sins. If our first reaction is hatred when we are offended, then we will never have friends, will we? Because friends will make mistakes. Friends will sometimes offend us. Sometimes friends will sin against us. But if our first reaction is hate, that friendship is going to be over. Our first reaction needs to be love and patience. Love motivates our actions. We can overcome the sins that others possibly sin against us. In all our interactions with the public, we are to be like lights in the world. Showing the world God's love and showing the world God's standards in the way we live. Matthew 5, verse 13 through 16. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has become tasteless, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on the lampstand, and gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. You're going to get tired of hearing this from me. We have an opportunity at the end of the month to let our light shine in this community. And I would urge you to not avoid that opportunity. 2 Thessalonians 3:6-12, if you want to be turning there. We should be known for our outstanding and honorable conduct when it comes to business and our work relationships. There's a couple of things to remember about our work and our labors. If we are not willing to work, first thing Paul mentions here is that the church is under no obligation to support us. 2 Thessalonians 3:6-12. Now we command you, brethren, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you keep away from every brother who leads an unruly life and not according to the tradition which you receive from us. For you yourselves know how you ought to follow our example, because we did not act in undisciplined manner among you, nor did we eat anyone's bread without paying for it. But with labor and hardship, we kept working night and day so that we would not be a burden to any of you. Not because we do not have the right to do this, but in order to you to offer ourselves as a model for you, so that you would follow our example. For even when we were with you, we used to give you this order: if anyone is not willing to work, then he is not to eat either. For we hear that some among you are leading an undisciplined life, doing no work at all, but acting like busybodies. Now such persons we command and exhort in the Lord Jesus Christ to work in a quiet fashion and eat their own bread. But as for you, brethren, do not grow weary in doing good. If we don't provide for our families, we are worse than an unbeliever. So we do need to work and have business relationships in our life. But we can look to the Proverbs for guidance in these matters also. While it is good to be a good provider for our families, having the wrong priorities is not helpful at all. In fact, it can cause us to lose our soul to eternal judgment. Righteousness is what we should seek ahead of riches. And that's what Proverbs 11:4 says. Riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. Riches are not going to make any difference when it comes to the judgment. We can't say to God at the judgment, say, look, I saved up all this money. I worked and earned all this money. That's not going to help us. Righteousness delivers from death. And Jesus said it, what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his soul? It doesn't matter how much you have in retirement. It doesn't matter how many bonds or IRAs or CDs you have saved up. If you are out of a covenant relationship with God, if you are not righteous before God, it's not going to matter in the judgment. You will suffer just like the unrighteous steward that Jesus told about in the parable. Proverbs 11:28, he who trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish like foliage. Jesus said that he is trustworthy with a little. He that is trustworthy with a little will be given more. If we take what little we have been given and just hoard it and hide it for ourselves, like in the parable, it is unlikely we will be trusted with more. Those that put their trust in God will flourish. We may not flourish with more and more riches, but we will experience some kind of blessings from God by having our attitudes in the right place. Proverbs 16:8, better is a little with righteousness than vast revenues without justice. What's our national budget right now per year? It's trillions of dollars. Trillions and trillions of dollars. It's almost unfathomable how much we spend. And are we getting good justice for all that we spend? Would you say it's a good trade-off for what we spend? I don't think anybody would take that as a good investment. We would be better off with a little and have good justice than to have trillions and have no justice, wouldn't we? So this is true at the personal level also. An employer or a person in a position of authority is better off to be righteous and just than to be taking advantage of their position just to enrich their pockets. We should all rather be known to be just and fair rather than rich and corrupt. Also, we must involve God in our business and work. If we commit our work to Him, we are more likely to succeed. Instead of taking all the credit and being selfish, God is pleased with our work if it is for His glory. Proverbs 16 and verse 3. Commit your works to the Lord and your thoughts will be established. Not only are we more likely to be blessed, we will be able to enjoy what we have all the more. Proverbs 10:22. The blessing of the Lord makes one rich, and He adds no sorrow with it. So when God blesses us, we are not going to be sorrowful, are we? Because God cannot add sorrow to our what He blesses us with. When we realize that what we have is God's, we are not so concerned if we might possibly lose it. Or if we use it to help others and realize that may have been what God intended, we don't have regrets about how it turned out, do we? If God intends us to share with others, and we know that we're doing it because that's what He wants us to do, we're not so overly concerned about the results that may or may not result from that benevolent work. People that are constantly concerned about what they have, and they're constantly concerned about their savings and what things cost and who is trying to get their money, are the most miserable and sorrowful people you'll ever meet. 1 Timothy 6:10, for the love of money is the root of all sorts of evil, and some, by longing for it, have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. Also, Hebrews 13:5, make sure that your character is free from the love of money, being content with what you have, for He Himself has said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. So when it comes to our business, we need to remember that it's not all about making more, earning more, keeping more. It's about doing it for God and His glory. That's why when we engage in business, it's understanding that it's all temporary anyway. Often problems come up and things don't turn out the way we would like them to. We can't always make firm predictions about our income and abilities in the future. Proverbs 27 verse 1, do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring forth. That is why we need to be careful about our debts. When we borrow money, we are pledging future labor and the blessings that we may or may not get. We don't know what tomorrow will bring, and we don't need to back ourselves into a corner if something doesn't turn out the way we expect. We need to be very careful about promising and pledging our future labor towards a debt. Because we may become injured, we may suffer calamity, we may suffer a natural disaster, and not be able to repay that debt. So we need to be careful about that. So in our labor, if we're working, and I think this applies to retired people too, we are laboring every day towards something. We need to be laboring for the kingdom, laboring for God. So this is not just about people that have employment or business. Diligence is the first thing we need to, quality we need to work on, and take initiative. Proverbs 10:26, as vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is the lazy man who to those who send him. So it's offensive, it bothers us, it's something difficult to deal with when we're dealing with somebody that's not willing to work. Proverbs 18 and verse 9, he who is slothful in his work is a brother to him who is a great destroyer. So our laziness in our work can bring down the whole team, can't it? Nobody likes to work with a person that's always slacking off or letting others take their responsibilities for them. We need to be the ones that are always completing the tasks we are given. Proverbs 12 and 24, the hand of the diligent will rule, but the lazy man will be put to forced labor. So if we're going to be diligent in our work, the goal is progress being made in our, you know, say our promotions, our skills, and eventually an increase in our wages or our blessings. If we are diligent to stay busy, those in charge of us will take notice and we eventually will be put in charge of other things. That's what it says. The diligent, the hand of the diligent will rule. To help us along, we need to always be developing our skills. Proverbs 22:29. Do you see a man skilled in his work? He will stand before kings. He will not stand before obscure men. Again, this is not just for those of us employed and working for wages. It applies to all of us working in the vineyard of the Lord. Always developing and honing new skills to better be able to serve those around us. In employment, the more skills makes for more efficient work and better pay. In the church, it means better relationships and better encouragement for our brethren. So we need to stay busy and avoid the water cooler, so to speak. In years past, it was the water cooler. Today, maybe it's the coffee machine or maybe Facebook. I don't know. Proverbs 14:23. In all labor, there is profit. The idle chatter leads only to poverty. So not being busy in our work, standing around, wasting time, idle chatter, often doesn't profit us anything. Often it promotes things like gossip and empty flattery, things we've already discussed that we should avoid in our friendships. So we need to stay busy in our work wherever we are in life. We need to be careful and not plan in haste. Proverbs 21, verse 5. The plans of the diligent lead surely to plenty, but those of everyone who is hasty surely to poverty. And also Proverbs 15:22, without counsel plans go awry, but in the multitude of counselors they are established. As a business manager or some sort of position of leadership, we need to carefully consider the path we are going to take to accomplish a goal. We don't just need to drive in ahead first, not seeking counsel ahead of time, not seeking advice, thinking we know better how to do something. I can personally think of many times in the past, if I had stopped and considered more carefully how to do something or had taken the time to seek advice, I would not have made such a big mistake. I think we can all remember times in our past we should have done things differently. And we plunged in too quick and ended up making mistakes. Also, those that are in positions of authority, we need to be fair to employees or those in our charge. Proverbs 28, verse 16, a ruler who lacks understanding is a great oppressor. So a ruler who lacks understanding is a great oppressor. We see a lot of that in our leadership today, don't we? Haven't we always, at some point in our life, we possibly worked for somebody that lacked understanding? It's one of the most frustrating things we can experience when it comes to work. So if we are in a position of authority or leadership, we need to make sure we understand all the details of a problem before we go to telling somebody else how to fix it. We've got a whole country that is full of rulers that have no understanding how the real world works. And so they end up oppressing the public because they mandate and declare things to be done their way instead of the right way. Proverbs 29, verse 7, the righteous consider the causes of the poor, but the wicked does not understand such knowledge. We need to understand those that we may be friends with, those that may be in our charge, if we are in positions of leadership of some kind. They may be poor. They may have to do things we don't understand. They may make mistakes that we don't approve of. But having compassion will go a long ways towards having a better relationship with them in the end. Proverbs 29:21, he who pampers his servant from childhood will have him as his son in the end. If we treat our workers and our fellow employees and people in our charge with dignity and give them all the resources they need to accomplish their goals, we can have a lifetime of friendship developed through our business relationships. Again, the important thing to keep in mind when it comes to our relationships, friendships, and business matters, and our labors, is that our conduct is always tempered by the desire to bring glory to God. 1 Peter 2:9-13. But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession, so that you may proclaim the excellencies of Him who has called you out of darkness into His marvelous light. For you once were not a people, but now you are the people of God. You had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. Beloved, I urge you as aliens and strangers to abstain from fleshly lusts which wage war against the soul. Keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles, so that in the thing in which they slander you as evildoers, they may, because of your good deeds, as they observe them, glorify God in the day of visitation. So that's my closing thought for this week. When you're out among your neighbors, when you're out among your employers, when you're out among your families and your friends, I urge you to live in a way that's wise and circumspect, thinking about God's laws, His Bible, and how He expects us to behave. And we will reap the blessings from that behavior. We don't need to look at it as slavery or as a restriction on our life. We need to look at it as opportunity and freedom to serve Christ each day this week.